Think about it. And this is all, I broke it up. This is all sequential, right? This is just one piece. Amar Rava Barbarahuna, Hani Shvaki de Sura. These merchants in the marketplace of Sura, Lo Avri Mishum Baal Talin, are not over the Isser of Baal Talin. Why not? Meida Yada de Al Yoma de Shuka Samchi. Because everybody knows, or the workers know, that they don't get paid until market day. So, probably, right, everybody knows that market day is Monday and Thursday. So if I hire you as my schlepper, right, I have one of those bastot in the shuk, and I hire you as my schlepper on Tuesday, the Gemara says, I'm not over Baal Talin, and everybody knows, I'm not going to sell this up till Thursday, I'm not going to have the money until Thursday. And therefore, that's sort of the assumption going in. And then the Gemara concludes, Aval mishum Baal Tishahe vadai over. But I am over the Rabbanan of Baal Tishah.
Why is that?
So why is that and when is that? Let's start. When? When's he over? Is he over immediately? Or is he only over if I didn't pay you on Thursday? In our example.
Immediately.
I'm sorry? So Rashi says Thursday, correct. But yeah.
Isn't he going to be over that anyway? I mean, why do they need to say that? If then he's going to be over both.
Well, you might say that once if the Doraisa doesn't attach, then the Darabanan can't attach.
But the Doraisa would attach if you didn't pay them on Shuk Day.
On what? No.
No?
No, the Doraisa doesn't attach.
At all.
That's Rashi. There may be other, I mean, that's Rashi. Yeah.
I wonder if it kicks not there on market day, but it works retroactively. So he's over it. Right, when he first throws them.
So that's not a position any of the Rishonim take. Right? On this point, I didn't find anyone who seriously disagrees with Rashi. And on 2 points. But let's go back to the other thing. In other words, the shell corporation, right? So in American law, these are called farm labor contractors, right? Which are these middlemen corporations that are thinly capitalized, that are basically hired to hire the workers. The farmer hires the farm labor contractor, he has a contract with him. The farm labor contractor hires the guys who actually do the work. And if there's any problem, the farmer says, I just hired this guy, that's on him, go find him. Well, it's a dummy corporation, right? Has no assets, you can sue them, but what does that get you? Absolutely nothing. Okay, that's how it works in American law. Now, let's talk about this. Why? Let's go to the, I call this, so I wrote an article on this, so yeah, I have a few copies here if anybody wants. I call this the agency loophole. So is this a good thing? Is this a bad thing? Why does it work? What are some problems? What?
We have two on the rhyme who are willing to do it on a regular basis.
Okay, so the Gemara seems to say, right, you know, there's two, you could imagine the Gemara saying, and anyone who does this is Nikra Rasha, right? That kind of thing, right? But that's not what the Gemara says. In fact, the Gemara seems to indicate the opposite. Going out of his way to tell us not only is this a halachic possibility, right? But at least three Amoraim, right? Yudabar, Raymar, Marzitra, seem to have done this, seems like, regularly. Yeah.
There's definitely no Isser to actually do this loophole. The Isser would kick in when you exploit this loophole.
Okay, fair enough, right, obviously, right, so if you pay the guy in time, then who cares? But the point of this is to set it up so that if I don't pay the guy in time, I'm not over Baal Talin.
Why would you use the loophole if you went to an exploit?
Okay, we'll get to that. Okay, so this could be a just in case. We're going to see some of the Rishonim are going to push in that direction. Yeah?
If we have two different places in the Torah that tell us that you
So the psukim are very clear, particularly the pasuk in Dvarim, and we'll come to some of those agadic voices in a minute. Seems to be like, you know, in Vayikra, it's sort of like, okay, lo talin haboker. But let's look. You know, the truth is we kind of skipped over that, but it's probably worth going back, right? Lo tashok in Dvarim now. Schir ani vevyon meachicha megercha asher baritzacha bishevecha biamoti ten scharo V'lo tavo alav ha-shemesh, ki anihu. Ve'elav hu noset nafsho. V'lo yikra lecha el ha-shem v'yabich ha-chet. So there's a lot of moral language in that pasuk, right? Particularly in Devarim. Not surprising. And yet, at least here, the Gemara seems to sort of think that the legal mechanics of the contract sort of can get you out of that. Yeah.
So, I don't have a good answer. I think it's a very good question about why there's no overt front end Haggadic regulation, but I definitely understand why there wouldn't be back end regulation, because if you're doing this sophisticated enough and you have this knowledge of the law, like some of these MOIM have, it'd be impossible to prove on the back end
If you hold that so here's the point, right? If you hold that the contractual form can obviate the back end regulation, then as soon as you have someone sophisticated, an Amara or an insurance company, you're going to have no back-end regulation. Because what are lawyers for cell phone companies and any kind of consumer transaction do? They take the form, they write it, they know you're going to sign it no matter what it says, they know you're not going to read it, they know if you try to read it, you're going to try to hang yourself. So they say whatever they want. So back-end regulation doesn't help. This is called the standard form contract or the contract of adhesion. Now we can take this further. Imagine that every Bala Bias in Surah goes and says to Rava, or not Rava, but some Amora whom go and mention, I will give $10,000 to your yeshiva if you write me a shtar, a contract that is bulletproof and that gets rid of Halanas Char Sachir and Pol Yachal Achzer Bo Chazayom B'chatzayayom, and Achilas Poel, and Onah, and Rib isn't out, or whatever in there, right? Whatever you want. And Shemitas Ksafim, and whatever, right? And Bal Yeron, Bal Yematza, okay? And everybody signs it. So, if you have a labor market where there's many more people who need labor than laborers, it doesn't matter. But I've never seen a labor market like that. Occasionally, right? After the Black Death in England, it seems to have been the case that they all of a sudden passed lots and lots of laws, basically forcing people to work, the theory being that there was more capital than there was labor, because a third of England died. Okay, but in markets that we're familiar with, right, there's always going to be more unskilled labor than capital in need of labor, and therefore you have, so the question is, I think the question of regulation, in one sense, is, does any of this matter? Does any of it matter? Do the economics matter? Does the contractual form matter? Does the availability of this loophole matter? That's one way of thinking. The other is like, well, you ask, why is the Gemara doing this? What's pushing them? I don't know. It's there. We'll get to the Haggadic voices in a minute, but now I'm going to kind of look and say, like, how much are these types of questions on the radar screen of the various Mefarshim as we move through the sugya? So let's start with the Rishonim. So Rashi says two things on this sugya, of relevant to the sugya. One, which we already talked about. Someone should ask, there's an obvious question on the agency loophole. Why does it work? What's the counter principle that should jump in here? Shluch Hashem Kamaso. Right? Wait a minute. Right? Shluch Hashem Kamaso. So why does this work? Okay, so we'll come to that. So Rashi maybe answers that. What does Rashi say in that first one? Velo Karina Lefi She'ein Pulaso Alav. Velo Karina Bey Pulaso Itcha. So there's different ways to read this Rashi. The Bach says Rashi's view, and the Meshach Samech, Meshach Chachma says basically the same thing. Rashi thinks it's Gzeres HaKasev. Lo talin pulat zichar itcha ad boker. There's a, to briskerize it, there's a din in itcha. Right? And the shaliach is not itcha. So the Bach's reading of Rashi is Gzeres HaKasev. Okay. Now, on the other point, like you said, on the Shuka Desura point, right? Look at Rashi. Rashi extends this. He says, "May the yadid al yom de Shuka kasamchi." Right. Remember, this is the guy hired to schlep on Tuesday, when everyone knows market day is Thursday. Hilchach afilu eit leimos gabei lo over. Therefore, even if the Baal Bayit has money on Tuesday, he's not over. Kidamrina le'el she'eno over a love ela boker rishon. Aval mishum ba'atisha over, Rashi explains, miyom hashuk ba'elach. So Rashi says, because the expectations of the market are such that he won't be paid that day, there's no iser. Therefore, even if the guy has money, the iser doesn't apply. And what does it mean you're over mishum ba'atisha? Not Tuesday morning, not Wednesday morning, not Thursday morning, but Friday morning.
Follow that line of reasoning, then couldn't you just always argue that, oh, the norm is to not pay our workers until whenever?
And yes.
Therefore, we don't have to.
So you, one of two things, right? Now, so you say the norm, okay? So if you can show that the norm is we pay everybody at the end of the month, mm-hmm. Yeah. Or better, by contract, right? In other words, it's not explicit here, but it seems to be that coming from the Shuka Desura Sugya, that if unarticulated expectations can set up the halacha, then kal vachomer articulated expectations, good, i.e. contractual language. Okay, last Rashi. Let's look at Tosfos. Tosfos is, I think, going to be sensitive to some element of this question. Why are the Amoraim doing this? So what does he say? Amar le lishmai zil ugerli polim. Lo mishum shehaya dato litchot, not because Yehuda bar Meremar was gonna push them off. Ela hayayare shelo ye panui latetlehem, but he was worried that he wouldn't be available to pay them. Va'afilu mishum ba tisha lo haover kevan shu osek b'melacha acheres, and therefore he's not over even the Derabanan, if he's engaged in other labor. All right, what is Tosfos saying? How's he modifying or intervening into the sugya here along the lines we're talking about? Yeah.
He's saying the agency loophole is not ethical, just that it's something to put, you can put in place if you want to make sure that, just so you're not over an idea.
Okay, so one way to read this is that he really thinks it's not ethical. The Amoraim did it. No, they didn't do it because they wanted to evade it. They did it because
To avoid accidentally being over.
To avoid accidentally being over. Okay. Yeah.
I don't think he's saying it's not ethical. I think he's saying they wanted to make sure that that the laborers would be paid, and they're giving themselves. I think he's not necessarily saying it's a loophole. He's saying there's a good chance that...
Well, you don't have to use that term. I made up that term. Okay. Go on.
I think he's saying there's a good chance that Marimar is going to be busy when his workers are around, so he wants to, cover
himself. So he wants to cover himself. Okay, so, yeah.
I think this is what he's entertaining the idea that intent matters.
Intent matters. Okay, so after Tosfos, or let's put it this way, assuming we accept Tosfos, how would you frame the halacha?
It's only usher if he intends to garnish wages or to sort of.
Well, we got a deal. We got a deraisa derabanan. Okay, so let's set it up. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Tosfos has added in another qualification of the rule in that you only have to pay. I mean, unless I missed it and we saw it somewhere else, there's another excuse for not paying someone on time, which is that you're busy with something else.
Okay, but what does that apply to? You're right, but according to Tosfos, that only applies to the Derabbanan.
Right.
Okay? So Tosfos says, well, let's time out. The agency, what I'm calling the agency loophole, I don't like that word, don't use it, come with something else. Does that apply to the Derabbanan or the Deraisa? So Tosfos says, applies to the Deraisa all the time. The Derabbanan, it depends. If you have a good reason why you're not paying them, then it also solves the Derabbanan. If you don't have a good reason, then the Derabbanan nevertheless applies. Right? So in Tosfos' view, the Deraisa is an on-off switch, right? It either applies or not. The Derabbanan is context sensitive. Right? What's really going on? Yeah.
It seems to be that there's also a small degree of moral programs that comes into play
this loophole strictly to get around the Doraita. I don't want to follow the Doraita, so I'm going to use the loophole. And so if lo mishum shayada talikho, meaning imayada talikho, there's a problem if you know it works.
Okay, I think that's right, right? So Tosus is a little bit, so Tosus is going to be bothered, I think, by some version of the kind of, what is the morality of this? And he says, right, well, it's only moral if you intend to pay them, and you're only doing it because you might get tied up something else, and you don't want to be caught up in this.
So, sorry, now I'm confused. The Oseik, the Malacha Aheret, is...
The Baal Bayit.
That would make him over on...
If he's not Oseik, b'malacha acheret. In other words, if he's just like blowing him off,
right.
Then, according to Tosfos, even if you use the agency loophole, you're still over the derabbanan.
Okay.
No, the derabbanan. Yeah.
Dana and Sarah mentioned this, but I think there's two sides of the era of what you are potentially afraid of. Either you are afraid of being over the Isser and then sort of like a Lifnim Mishurat Adin situation,
okay.
Or you are afraid of the moral issue of not paying. I mean, it's two sides of the same coin.
Okay, good. Let's hang on to that. All right. So the next stop, I think we can skip it because we've basically done it. The way we read it is basically, I mean, we'll look at it inside, the way the Shulchan Aruch reads him, and you'll see how he incorporates Tosfos on page 4. Ha'omer l'shlucho tzei v'schor li polim v'sachar v'omlem scharchem alba abayis ein echad miyem over alba atalin. Okay, that's the Gemara. Now Tosfos. Umiyu. Baal Abayis over Mishum al Tumar Lerecha Leich Vashov, that's the Ramanan, im Eino Tarud umekavein lidchotam. Right, so you see the Mechaber sort of absorbs Tosfos into the regulatory structure and says that the Rabbanan is going to be context sensitive. Avar Zmano, Sif Hey, Ein Baal Abayis over Mishum al Talin, umikol makom chayv litan lo miyad. And that's the core derabbanan, right? That after the first day, you're not over anymore, but the derabbanan still applies. And then Tess is going to be the shuka desura, right? Sachir shemakir bebal abayit she'ein darko liyot biyado mot el biyom ashuk. He knows the baal abayit only has money on market day. Eino over bebal talin, afilu yesh lo mos, even if he has money. Umiyom ashuk ve'elach, then if he doesn't give it to him, then he's over in the derabbanan. Okay. Yeah.
This is an aside, but in today's day, when people use market-to-market accounting, would you be liable to pay?
Well, I think today you would say, what is right, that you know, what does your contract say about pay periods? Right. That's how you'd start.
But if there is no space in the contract.
If there is no space in the contract, so then. I think you then certainly the Isser attaches, right?
Even.
All right, we'll see. The Chafetz Chaim is going to talk a little bit about access to capital. Okay, now, we said that the kind of looming question here is, what about Shlucho Shalom Kamoso? Why doesn't that break the agency sort of conception? So here's where I think we could transition into Darchei Alimud, because we can ask that, even that question. We'll see, the Ritva asks it and the Tosfos Rit ask it. They basically ask this question. And I think you can understand this question at two levels. You can understand it flatly. And say, in other words, this is just a question of there is a competing halachic rule. And as long as we square and explain to you why that rule doesn't apply, we have no more question. You could also read it differently, right? That Shlucho Shalom Kamoso is halachic rule. The halachic rule itself is expressing a moral premise that you can't simply have someone else do your dirty work and not, right? In other words, what is Shlucho Shalom Kamoso, right? Is it merely a legal principle? And therefore, if we could solve that legal principle, we have no more problem. Or is it a legal principle that betrays a sort of moral understanding that I can't simply hand off something to you and therefore disassociate it from it? To use Geertzian terms, is it thick or is it thin? Yeah.
Well, then we also have an Eishech with Barbera, I guess, coming there also.
Okay. What's the Avera? Right? The act of assigning a Shliach isn't an Avera.
What?
Right? The act of making a Shliach to hire a worker isn't an Avera.
Unless the No, but if...
Like, this is what you raised before. Right, the Aveira comes from at the end, not paying it.
Right.
We'll see. Some Achronim will go in that direction, but I think it's tough. Okay. So the Ritva says something. This is winds up being the old Ritva, so it's not really the Ritva, but everybody thinks it's the Ritva. But I'm not a historian. He says, Tema, da b'chol makom shlucho shalom kamoso. And he says, v'shem alo amrinan hachi l'chol vaso. Maybe we don't say that here when it's not to his benefit. Whatever that means. V'tzarech ian, da halekim yuta b'kra, da b'inan shiyeh scharam hu, socharam hu. But he doesn't like that, and he says, there's no, unlike the Bach reading of Rashi, there's no Xeris HaKasav that says it has to be him specifically. So the Ritva basically raises the question, but doesn't give an answer. I'm sorry? Here's a Shema. All right, what's the Shema? So there's a bunch of Achronim that try to explain this. Yeah.
The Shema says that certain rules work only with Zechut. And this is like this is a rule that works only with Zechut Adam. And so
Shli, okay, but what's the chova here?
What's the chova? You would be chayav on Baal Tam.
Okay.
To do a
right, you could go the other way, but he doesn't like that answer anyway. Yeah.
Maybe if chovaso is in the Ramanut sense.
Okay, so machmorim go that way. Okay, so this is sort of this becomes the hook for all, because the words are so right. All the achronim have a field day here, along the lines that you guys. Discussed. So let's just sort of do them outside. So there's a bunch, but what the shoot the it's the Sholem Eishiv, right? Nathan's son. He basically says, well, he tries a few different, but one he says, well, it's a chovas aguf, right? He says itcha, it's a chovas aguf, and therefore the guf isn't kanui. In other words, because. Right, he picks up on a strand that's definitely in the halachos of Poel, because a Poel is like a quasi-Eved, right? Yad Poel, Yad Eved, etc. And therefore, like there's some this sort of intermediary kind of takes away that angle of it. He then has another sort of answer that well, because Poel yachol lachzer v'b'chazi ayom, sonsugya. There's not really a contract here, and therefore it's only when he performs it, but some kind of complicated lumdus like that. Here, you'll see the Gedulei Shmuel, who's a 20th century, you know, take a look at the first paragraph, he just sets up the question, V'ulai b'selcher po'al idei shliach kol ha'shliachos nogea rak l'chaivu b'v'al talin. De'ein kan shum chalos kinyin ba'amir da'alma. He says, no, there's no contract, because they didn't do a kinyan here. So there's no real contract. Because there's no real contract, there's no real shlichus. And therefore, so there's a variety of answers that have this sort of structure in the Achronim, in which they basically try to, in one way or another, none of them, in my view, all that compellingly, say there's no shlichus here, because there's no kinyan, because it's a chovas aguf, one of these sorts of things, and therefore, that's why it works. Now, if we think about this, right, what they're really saying is, we're not addressing the moral question, right? We're going to treat this question as a thin question, the shlucho shel adam kamoso, and therefore, so long as we can find some lamdisha answer, the question of the morality of this doesn't matter. Nor does the question of, what if, right, then you can ask, what if, like we said before, if every balabas in town uses this, does that matter? Does the relative bargaining power between Polo and balabais matter? So, one of the critiques of Lundis is that it doesn't have a way to think about any of this, right? There's no access point in which you can start asking these questions because it sort of deems them all irrelevant. Our only question is, why not Shulchan Aruch Kamoso? We can answer that. And these are external, exogenous questions in the legal system that don't really enter. Yeah.
But, I mean, they chose to give Lamdashay answers, but if they want to give a moral answer, then they have done that.
So we'll see, maybe others do. Okay, but we're talking about these guys. Right, I'm going to divide into categories. All right, I now want to go and look at some agadic voices. that are going to push in a different direction, and we'll see if that, how that changes the conversation. So here, remember to go back, there's a bunch of difficult words in the psukim in Devarim, right? Let's go back to page one for a second. Probably the most difficult word is the elav hu noseh nafsho. What does that mean? I think I gave you the NIV at the bottom. What does that mean? The elav hu noseh nafsho.
I guess, like,
and
NIV thinks about it as, like, expectation of payment.
So, Elav is the payment.
Yeah.
And Noset Nafsho means?
Something like Samachetato or something. Like, he's relying on it.
Okay, well, Elav Samachetato.
Or, like, literally, he's depending his life upon it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
I was going to say, like, people for, in course of people having jobs and needing to make a living, they'll do things that are somewhat dangerous.
Okay, we'll see that. Good. So all the you'll see the Midrashim are going to pick up on actually all three of these suggestions. Let's start from the Midrash Tanaim at the bottom, very bottom, page 5. V'lo tavo alav ha-shemesh. Mipnei mai tamo shel davar. What's the reason? Magid ki anihu ve'lavu noseh nafsho. Mipnei ma zeh alav ha-kevesh v'nitzle ba'ilan u'masar etzmo. In other words, hey, farm work is dangerous. You're climbing up on ramps. You're hanging around on treetops. You are risking your life. Lo shititein lo itzcharo. Not that you should. He should be paid. Davar acher. Ve'ilav u'nosan nafsho. Melameid shekol ha'kovei tzchar sachir k'ilu notel et nafsho mimeno. In other words, nafsho now becomes his soul. So he has trusted his soul in it. Lema hasachir domeh. What is the worker similar to? Lemi shahaya mahalach baderech v'chamaru achara. If you're walking and you have your donkey behind you. Lakach lo aluma shel amir na'al k'tifav. You take a thing of grain and you put it on your shoulder. V'aya chamor ba baderech acharav mekaveh lecho ot aluma. The whole time the donkey's walking back behind you, seeing the food and trying to eat it. Ma asa oto ish? Hamid chamor b'ptoch habayit. So then when he gets home, he ties the food just above the reach of the donkey. Amru lo rasha. Kol haderech uratz bishvilav, achshav ein atan notna lefanav, kach hasachir amal umitzta'er kol hayom l'scharo. V'atam otzi rekan, ve'ilav hunoseh enosho. So here we have very graphic imagery, right? Given the fact this is a fairly early Midrash Tanaim, that is kind of pulling on the Elav Unoset Nafsho and Loi Kared Dechachet to sort of demonstrate the evil of the person who is Malin Schar Sachir. You had a question?
I mean, you gave it sort of a metaphysical reading about this soul. It should be just like you're taking his life.
Okay. Maybe. We'll see, the Zohar does that expressly and amps it up more. But I think I think that this second story doesn't quite, right? Maybe that's the first one. The second one is sort of pushing that way.
No, but the first one is he gave his life.
Right.
The second one is you are taking his life.
Because he comes home with no food.
Right.
Okay. All right, let's skip the next one. Let's go to the top of page 7, because now the Gemara is going to, I think, begin to push in this direction. Davar acher, ve'elav hu noset nafsho, kol hakovei tzchar sachir k'ilu notel nafsho mimeno. So that, I think, begins to push, and here's why. Rav Huna v'Rav Chista, chad amar nafsho shel gazon, v'chad amar nafsho shel nigzal. So whose life is being threatened here? So in Pshat, of course, it's the worker's life or livelihood. Right, but by now, in the Gemara here, it's clearly soul, right? Because now we're talking about whose soul are you destroying? Are you destroying your soul by withholding it, or are you destroying his livelihood? Something like that. And we see the Zohar is going to pick up on this and, you know, like the Zohar does everything, amp up the metaphysics. So, lo tavo alav ha-shemesh. So the Zohar here is going to say, the sun should not set. And in Zohar language, it's not the sun setting, but it's the sun setting on your life. So if you don't want the sun to set on your life, you better not be kovei shchar sachir. Mihacha ufinan mila achrina. From here we learn another thing. Man de ishlan de nafsha de maskana, the person who pays the poor worker, afilu damu yomi listakam ama, even if it's time for his life to be taken from this world, God gives him more life. And then it continues. Lo telin pulat sachir, tachazi, come and see. Man dinatil agra de miskana, the person who withholds the wages of the poor, ki ilu natu nafshe v'de'inish beite. It's as if, now here we're clearly talking about soul, as if he takes a soul and, hey, remember, who's this guy? He's the dad. He's got the kids at home. And the life of those who depend on him. Who is our nafshayu? Kutshabrichu, who is our yome? So just as the withholder tried to shorten the life of the worker, God will shorten the life of the withholder. The azer nafshe me'ulama, and shorten his life on this world. The ha kol inun havalim dinafik mipume kol ahoyuma. All the breaths of difficult, laborious sweat that the worker sort of cried out during that day. Kulu salkin kame kutshabrichu mekaminen kame. They all arise before God and are there in front of him. Levater de salka nafshav and nafshav din shibese. Mekaminen b'inun havalim nipume. So this, of course, so they all come, and not only his cries, but the cries of all the kids at home who are starving to have their food come before God and become like the kategor, against the withholder. V'kedin afilu id gazra alohu barnash kama yamin v'kama tavin. And in this case, even if the balabait had many good gzeros written about him, kulan mit akrin mine mastalkin mine. So all those things are taken away, and none of that, he does not go to heaven. And then the Gemara continues the Zohar continues that when Rav Hamanuna would hire someone, he would go up to him and say, take your wage, because he says, I don't want to hold on to your soul, because he says, only God, right? Only God can hold on to the soul. And he personifies the wage as a person's soul. And he says, take it, I don't want it. And he says, even if the guy said, well, listen, be my shomer, I want this to it should be a picadon, he says, I don't want to take it. Okay, so if we talk about, I promised you we'd get to the amping up, right? So the Zohar kind of takes this and brings in, very much focusing to some degree on the person, right? Taking that midrashic tradition on the person, on the pain, and the Zohar even on his children, etc. Question is, we can now ask in Chakira terms. What is a Zohar? I mean, what happens when this agadic language re-enters the halachic realm? I think what we're going to see is that now we have kind of two competing interests. We have the paying the guy, and we have the over the isser. Now, how do you read the Zohar? Or how do you read the Midrashim? Is it telling you about, is it emphasizing the guy and his pain? Yes. But it's also emphasizing the Chomer HaIsser. So, what's the next step?
Minimize the
Isser. Minimize the Isser. Now you're going to see this.
Who's sinning in the world?
The Shulchan Aruch Rav is going to say, you know what we should do? Lechatchila, you should do the agency loophole. Why? Hey, you just read the Zohar. This is serious business. Right? There's a lot of stuff going on there. You're going to shorten your life and life of your family. I don't want anything to do with that. So here's what's going to happen. First thing, set up the agency loophole. Then, it'll steer clear of the issue. Now, let's make sure to pay the guy. Let's look at that inside. Let's look at it in the moon. So this is Shulchan Aruch Rav, right? The Baal HaTanya. Gedolei HaChachamim Hayu Noagim Lischor Paolim Al Yedei Shaliach. Shiomer scharchem al ba'abayis, kidei shelo yavo la'avor ba'al ta'aseh, im hayu trudim, velo yeh lehem k'nai l'from bizmana. So he says, that's why Now you understand why Yehuda Bar-Maraim and the Amoraim are hiring for each other. They know the Zohar. Ve'im i'afshar ayidei shliach, tov lahatnot im asachir b'sha shesochro al menach lo yitchayev lifro. And if you can't do that, you should at least contract with him to say that I'm not going to have to pay you until a later time. Shema ki shema yetaro de shema lo yilomot beramach kidei shiuchal lifro. Okay, because you might not have money to pay. V'itzarech lo tzim v'nimtza over v'lo tase v'afilu lo haya klal v'afilu lo yia lo klal. And even if he doesn't have money at all, midas chasidos lovos v'lifroa l'schir bismano mashen kein b'man imo kotnai shemamun kai. He says, so why should you use? Because even if you don't have any money, if you're chayv mikar hadin, you might need to go borrow money. And because we don't want to get in any of that. So therefore, best, use a shaliach. Second best, contract with him. And then he continues. Now that we set the tznai up, and you're not going to be over, of course, you should try to pay the guy on time. Okay, then he continues on. So, right, look what happens here when we combine halachic logic and agadic logic. Is that it seems to be there's now a split between the interest of paying the guy and the interest to be rachok mitvar aveira. So his solution is that dafka lechatchila, you should use the agency loophole. If not, you should use a tnai to make sure you're nowhere near the isser, because the isser is very, very chamor. And then, of course, you should try to do it. Now, the shach. Right, if the Shulchan Aruch Harav is too out there for you, you see in the next source, the Shach basically says the same thing. Okay, you had a question.
Yeah, I mean, the agency model doesn't take it doesn't take away the tsar you're causing the employee.
Correct.
So I mean, even with this like PS FLPK, it's very soft language. It seems that the Baal Chaim is like sort of doing away with this amped up metaphysical issue.
No, I think he just think it applies to the Isser. In other words, what he's doing is he's saying the metaphysics is about the metaphysics come from being over the Avera, not from causing the guy pain. Now, often those will go together, but we can split them. So therefore, his goal is to try to split them because he's most afraid of the Isser. He also thinks you should pay the guy, but that causes him less terror in his soul.
So... are you saying that this is still outside the moral realm? Because
I think you see here the challenge, right, of combining these two systems.
But more than I just say that he's avoiding moral realm because it seems like a really.
I think that's too strong because he clearly says you should pay him and it's a good thing, right? But he's trying to disaggregate the moral realm from the halakhic realm. Yes.
Which is not really a good read of the Zohar because the entire idea is that the literal breaths and the pain of the person is coming before God, so because you haven't paid them. So the fact that you have a loophole doesn't necessarily alleviate that problem.
It doesn't, but he's reading, the Zohar is talking about the Isser, yeah.
But it could be the kind of case where if it's Hashem's responsibility to assert justice, then you don't have to worry so much.
Then what do we need the whole thing for?
No, as in, right, no, but really, that's why the agency loophole is, like, therefore the ideal way to solve the problem, because that way you're removing the sin from the doer of the sin, and as for the recipient of the oppression or the wrongdoing, Hashem will take care of them.
Okay, but meaning...
I'm not arguing it. I agree that this is a misread of the Zohar.
I didn't say that. I don't know. I'm saying it's his reading of the Zohar. Okay. Now, yeah.
I was just going to say this. I feel like this is there's a good parallel in terms of how, companies protect themselves, and that, like, if you're passing along the cost to the consumer, then the point of me suing you doesn't really register because you're not actually losing anything.
Right.
It's like a good, right? So, like, what's the point? But they have to do that to protect themselves so that they can be a company that sells things, right? Like it's
Yes. So I think what happens here is that you have this very strong agadic thing, which, I mean, the Zohar is strongest, but we saw throughout, but the one that kind of meets what happens is a disaggregation, I would say, of the halacha from the policy, right? And the favoring of, okay, let's not be over the isur, and the policy becomes secondary. Now, I think this is one of the problems when you start thinking about regulating in a ritual context. Because if you think of these as rituals, right, they're going to have a certain logic to them, where if you think of them as policies, they have a different logic to them. Now, the Chafetz Chaim, in the interest of time, I'm going to kind of summarize here. The Chafetz Chaim has kind of a couple of chapters in the Avos Chesed that's about Halanos Shechar Sachir. And he has an introduction, and he explains why he's writing this. And in this direction, he makes this case explicitly. An explicit case for the ritualization. Because he says, wait a minute, I know all these people, and you could read it to yourselves, who would never wait to do lulav until the end of the day. And would never wait to do milah or eat matzah until the last possible time. They would, of course, do all these things the moment the chiyuv sets. Right? They daven vasikin and they take lulav in the morning. Right, and they do milah right away. But when it comes to sar sachir, they wait and this and that. Right? And he says, why? Basically, because people don't think of these as mitzvos. In our language, they're not ritual. They're chomish and mish, but they're not yoredeya or echayim. So he basically says, I'm going to try to tell you the halachos. He doesn't say it this way, but he basically, let me try to orachayim the eyes leaves for you so that you take them seriously. And that's what he does. Right? That's what he does. So he, and therefore you'll see that, so when is night? What? Let's take some examples. For the Chafetz Chaim, when is night? Is it Shkir or is it Tzeis? So in his ritualization, he's going to say, well, when you're a Shkir Yom, and Shkir, when you're a Shkir Lila, it's going to be Tzeis. Right? Right? So he's going to read this all to be Machmir. Now he's going to say, okay, the Gemara is ambiguous. The Rishonim themselves are sort of ambiguous as to like, well, what do you mean you don't have money? Right? Do I have access to credit? Do I have to sell my stuff? Right? So what you see the Chafetz Chaim do in every interstices, he is machmir to the favor of the poel. Right? So he says, well, if you don't have money, then borrow. And if you have schora, you need to sell it. And even at a loss. None of that is in the Gemara. Gemara even cuts the other way. I mean, this is a little, I'm simplifying, but in other words, what you see him do is take a totally ritualized sort of direction on this. And he says, you know what, if you don't think you're going to have the money, you shouldn't hire the guy at all. And a Shomer Nafsho would have the money right there. Okay, this is all great, but now let's think about this. Like, you know, can you really run a business this way? Meaning, we have trade credit, we have debt, So I think this sort of, to me, typifies the type of problem you see, is that you're going to be super, super machmir, and then you're going to need a loophole, right? Because you can't actually run a business. Imagine someone trying to run a business the way they clean for Pesach, right? In other words, that's really what he's trying to do, right? And there's something very laudable to it. But of course, before I hire someone, I have to think that to make sure I have all the money on hand, right? The world doesn't work that way. So I think, well, this is, to me, one of these, is an example, we talk about others, but when you think of regulation as ritual, and then you put it in this context, it then takes on these proportions. It's hard to be sensitive to the sort of, like, factors that matter. Yeah?
Is the Chafetz Chaim, when he says the thing about having the money on hand,
So this is the Chafetz Chaim strategy, right? It's very clear in Mishnah Berurah here too. He never says what's Mikra Din that's not, but he says those sort of things like Vishomer Nafsho VeYare VeChein Yesh Linhog. In other words, what the Chafetz Chaim does in the Mishnah Berurah is he's constantly, if you think about what the Aruch HaShulchan tells you, he believes in the one right answer, right? Aruch HaShulchan, this answer, this is Halacha. Boom. Chafetz Chaim says, look, this is a horn. There's different ways. Here's the Shitas, but of course you're going to want to go here. And that has, right, so he has his way of kind of gently normatizing the chumras, right? And that's why people perceive him as being machmir. He's being machmir, actually, in some sense, right, he has a much more pluralistic conception, because he's going to say, look, all these achronim argue, I'm not going to think he's right. I'm telling you what's more frum. right? And that's what he does. And he does the same thing here. And you can look at his language and you'll see him doing this. So he's never going to say something's mickered and it's not. Right? But he's going to, like, nudge you that way. And because he's encouraging a kind of ritualistic take, what? I'm not going to do that. Now, what does he do with the agency loophole? Here, he actually thinks quite differently. And here he has a pretty big chiddush. Let's take a look on page 11. On that Dalet. So the bet is the basic halacha. And now he qualifies it. And he says, Bameh dvar mamurim, b'shliach be'alma. And a regular shliach, whatever that means. Avomishu apotropos al nechse chavero, av sha'apolim yodim she'en hamalacha shelo, v'afilu scharin b'stama, havekomer scharachem alai. V'chein isha she'esh labal, v'no seizes v'no tenet betoch habayis. He says, that's just like a stam shiach. But if you're, and it seems to be talking about some kind of corporate officer, right, who isn't the balabait, but some sort of regular employee, he says, you already become the balabait. That's interesting who he cites here. He cites the Rush. Who he doesn't cite is the Tosfot Rid. And I want to look at that and end there. Because I think here we do see in the Tosfot Rid and in the Chafetz Chaim, and we'll see in the Nemukei Yosef, a more substantive approach to this agency question. The Tosfot Rid asks the same question. Aye, Shluch Hashalom Kamoso. And his answer is, we'll do it outside, but you can look at it. He says, there is no agency loophole. He says, you're misreading the Gemara. How is the Gemara structured? First, it told you the case that we talked about as the agency loophole. And then it told you the case of the Shuka Desura, right? The guys in the marketplace. He says, this is the same thing. This is about expectations. Just like in the Shuka Desura case, we said when the guys know that they're not going to get the money today, there's no Isur. So that's the case of the Shaliach. It's not because there's some like magical Xeris HaKazav or some complicated alumnus. It's because when you don't deal with the guy who has the money, you have enough smichas das that you'll get paid, but you don't have smichas das that you'll get paid today because you're not talking to the guy who holds the coins. So that's the Tosfos Rid's answer. He says, of course, Shluch Hashalom Kamoso. But this has nothing to do with that. This is the Gemara is just offering two flavors of the same underlying principle, the principle of reasonable expectations. And therefore, so that's what Tosfos Rid says. So therefore, seems to be open to that, that if you have a shaliach case, right, and this is really the Chafetz Chaim's psak, although he must have not had the Tosfos Rid, because he doesn't cite it. He cites it from like a kvetched reading of the Rush. But if you have a type of shaliach, where it's reasonable to form expectations on that basis, then you would be over the Isur. Now, the Nemukei Yosef has a version of Tosfos that's a little different. And here he says, this is interesting, because he basically says, those Amoraim, they were over the Isser Derabbanan. Let's take a look. On page 10, at the bottom. Yehuda bar Meremar, Amar le Dishmai, Yischarchem al-Baal Bayis, Lav le Meimar, Shiyachol l'tchoso, Deha v'chol apachos ba'al tisha, Ika. This does not mean that you could push them off, because in any event, you're still going to be over the Isser of Ba'al tisha. So he must have a different version of Tosfos that says, that is willing to say that these Amorayim were over the Isser Derabbanan. Now, maybe that's why it didn't become the mainstream view of Tosfos, right? But according to the Nemukei Yosef, the whole discussion in the Gemara is about the Doraisa. But he thinks the Derabbanan doesn't go. Other achronim you'll see say, okay, maybe you're not over the Isser of Baal Talin, but you're certainly over the Nevatel Yaseh of the Yomo Titein Scharo. Another approach is, but it's still a debt, and there's a mitzvah Lifra Baal Chov. The Pitchei Choshen on the bottom of Shulchan Aruch basically turns the whole thing upside down, and he says, Ha'omer L'Shlucho, I'm now on the last page, Katuv b'sefer mamer kedishin nir le'aniyat ayti medilok tani omer adam l'shlucho Mashma davka b'di'eved ain't over. Avla chatchila over mishum ba'al tisha. Behavi raya l'dvar medivri atosos. So I don't see how you read that out of Tosos. But, so what you see here, right, is that there's, you can almost think of three lines here. Three lines in the Rishonim, or three approaches to this. One that sort of like is unwilling to really kind of engage in what I would call the kind of moral question underneath here. And sees everything in these sort of halachic lines, and therefore reads the question of Shluch Hashonim Kamoso in a kind of formal way, and gives a formal answer, and it's done. Another approach kind of looks at this agadic material, right, which very much is focused on the person and the pain, right? But then what we see is that, like, when that kind of intersects with the halachic logic, it almost swings the other way by separating the moral question from the halachic question, saying take care of the halachic question first and the moral question secondarily. And then there's a line, and I see the Tosfos read explicitly, the Nemuka Yosef quite explicitly, Tosfos a little bit, the Chafetz Chaim in his own way, and a couple other Achronim who are, in their way, grappling with this question and trying to minimize this agency loophole or say there are other considerations at play. Right? I did not find anyone who expands it. In other words, any discussion of the Shlichus case is looking to shrink it. So I think that I think it's fair to say that there is an implicit sort of grappling with this question, largely underneath, right? Rarely kind of is it brought up expressly, that is trying to deal with this. So I think if we look at this sugya as a model, I think we could say a couple things. One, right, that the question of regulation in halacha is difficult for a variety of reasons. One of them is events quickly take on ritualistic aspects, right? And we don't really have, halacha doesn't have a great language outside of that. So that you start seeing what happens in Chafetz Chaim of like, you begin to think everything is like an Isser and then it takes on its own language and then you could get very, very big chumras until you get into a kula, right? I think chametz works like this, right? Ribbis works like this. In other words, a bunch of these things work this way. We keep on, like, it's chumra, 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 but then, like, the system doesn't work, so then you kind of create a back door, and that's a little bit happening here. The second thing we see is that there's clearly a way to avoid the moral question, and there's, like, a reading of the sugya based on, I think, you know, well-founded, well-sourced Rishonim and Achronim that just ignores it. But I think there's also a reading that, while not sort of not raising that expressly, but clearly is bothered by this question, and in these various interstitial ways is looking to get to it. So that at the end, so the Orach HaShulchan who ends this, but, you know, in every case you should always do this sort of L'shem Yisur HaDin, and the Darabanan always apply, right, and that is sort of within the framework given to them, very much trying to bring out those questions. I think that's what we learned. I'm going to end, and we'll just really end here, to just because I think this applies to kind of questions of regulation halacha more generally. That's a great quote from Carl Llewellyn. Carl Llewellyn was a legal theorist, expert on contract law, and the principal drafter of the fascinating document called the Uniform Commercial Code. Okay, it's really boring, but you know, but sort of one of the great legal theorists and contract commercial lawyers of the 20th century. And in the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, he created something called unconscionability. Now, unconscionability was a catch-all phrase for this contract isn't fair. And this was very controversial. And what Llewellyn said was, look, the law has been doing this all the time. And he wrote a whole book about this, basically. But he said they always use covert tools. Covert tools are sort of underground, you know, special ops. We interpret things here, we squeeze them here, we narrowly construe here. And part of his whole effort in the UCC is to get rid of that and say, no, we're just going to put it on the table. A contract's unconscionable, will not be enforced. Now, this is very controversial, still is. But he gives a one-paragraph rationale for that, which I think is sort of a good way to end and a good thing to kind of think about. And this is explanation of why covert tools aren't enough, why we need an express provision in the UCC that says we do not enforce unconscionable contracts. And he says, here's why covert tools aren't good. First, since they all rest in the admission that the clause, talking about contracts, that the clauses in question are permissible in purpose and content, and they invite the draftsman to recur the attack. give him time, and he will make the grade. In other words, if you just say technically it fails, so as soon as that decision comes out, every lawyer is going to go back and fix that technicality. Second, since they do not face the issue, they fail to accumulate either the experience or authority in the needed direction. That of marking out for any given type of transaction what is the minimum decencies are which a court will insist upon as essential to an enforceable bargain of a given type, or as being inherent to the bargain type. As if you never say, this is unfair, you never have that policy discussion of what are the limits of contract law? What are the limits of the bargains we're willing to enforce? Third, since they purport to construe, and do not really construe, nor intended to, but instead are tools of an intentional creative misconstruction, they seriously embarrass latter efforts at true construction, latter efforts to give the true meaning of his wholly legitimate contracts and clauses, which call for their meaning to be gotten instead of avoided. He says, look, if people sense it's a game, then it's not going to work. Right? If every time you're construing it narrowly, right? So the example he uses here is an exculpatory clause in the lease that says, hey, the Baal Bais is not chaya for any damage that happens in the stairwells, in the yard, in the pool, right? And it lists like 15 different things. And then, of course, how do they allege the case? That the woman injured herself on the lawn. And what does the court say? Ah, doesn't say lawn here. No exculpatory clause. Baal Bais pay. And he says, right, and this is the example, which by the way is very, examples like this I think are very common. Halachai says first, right, you know what's going to happen? Every lawyer's just going to write the word lawn in and going to lawn and pothole. That's how you get these 3-page definitions. Two, you're failing to say, wait, we're really asking how much liability can the owner disclaim? And third, if that's the way you interpret these clauses, don't come crying to me, right, when people interpret other clauses that you want to be taken seriously this way, because you'll always find something. The net effect is the unnecessary confusion and unpredictability together with inadequate remedy and evil persisting that calls for remedy. And that is his reason why he wants to address these questions up front. There's problems with that, but that we'll have to save for law school. Thank you. Yeah.